Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay. So we shall begin our Q&A. Apart from death, do you have a magic formula that we can use to drop us into an urgent sense of meditation? How can we be 10% of your concentration? Contemplation death or mindfulness death is one way to arouse the sense of urgency to practice the Dharma. But maybe we do not know death. Even in Chinese language, sometimes we as if scolding a person that you don't know death. You know death, then definitely you put forth effort to practice the Dharma in order to free from this cycle of birth and death. So according to the teachings, there are other contemplations. For example, one contemplates birth is suffering, old age is suffering, disease or sickness suffering, death is suffering, the suffering in the lower states of existence. Lower states means such as hell, the realms of hungry ghosts, animal world, and the asura. One contemplate the miseries of the past rooted in the cycle of rebirth, the misery of the future rooted in the cycle of rebirth, the misery of present rooted in the cycle of rebirth. So according to the teachings, these are the source of samvega. Samvega means sense of urgency to practice the Dharma, especially my first meditation, Vipassana meditation, in order to attain enlightenment and to be free from samsara. So one might need to contemplate again, if one did not contemplate seriously, one may not gain the benefits of contemplations. Actually, the best inspirations to meditate or to cultivate or to practice Dharma, actually the best inspiration is your own suffering. Isn't it? Your best inspirations to learn the Dharma, to practice Dharma, in order to be free from samsara, is your own experience of suffering in life. But you do not know suffering, you are you are a happy go lucky person, thinking that this life you are living without any worries, doesn't have to worry of future, then maybe you could not put forth, then there's no feeling of no sense of urgency to practice the Dharma. Actually, this also mentioned in one of the sutta, but you may read yourself in the Samyutta Nikaya. The sutta, actually, the Buddha was explaining the proximate cause in terms of dependent originations. And one of the proximate cause to have faith or confidence sadha is suffering. So if your own suffering cannot make you to wake up to practice Dharma, I think no one can do it for you. Other contemplations, like sometimes we contemplate that we are very fortunate. Do you know that you are very fortunate? The Buddha said, be born in the human world is the most fortunate beings among all these, among the 31 planes of existences. There's a sutta where the Buddha talk about it. The title is Akhana Sutta. Akhana means opportune. Akhana means inopportune. Inopportune moments. It happened at the bad time or wrong time. It's happening at the opportune moment. Then whatever you're going to do, most likely you shall be successful. But it's happening at the inopportune moments, there's no chance to be successful. So the Buddha explained in this sutta, Akhana Sutta. He said that uninstructed rulings or said, the world has gained the opportunity. But the Buddha said, they do not know what is an opportunity and what is not an opportunity. So the Buddha explained further, there are these eight inopportune moments that are not right occasions for living the spiritual life. Some teachers name this sutta, discourse, as eight unfortunate existences. Unfortunate existences. So what is the first inopportune moment? The Buddha has arisen the world. The Buddha is endowed with all these attributes. Arahant, Sammasambuddha, Vijayacarana Sampanno, and so on. And the Buddha also taught the Dharma leading to peace, to Nibbana enlightenment. But one is reborn in hell. One is reborn in hell. So if one is reborn in hell, one will suffer all the time. There's no opportunity for beings in hell to learn and practice Dharma. There's only suffering. That's all. Then the next, the Buddha said, similarly, Tathagata has arisen the world, endowed with all these attributes, and taught the Dharma leading to peace, Nibbana, enlightenment. But a person is reborn in the animal realm. So as you know, animals are not fortunate. Sometimes they are tortured, by other beings and so on. So they don't have the condition or to live a spiritual life. So when we talk about spiritual life, here means that our life is guided by the teaching of the middle path. In other words, the Noble Eightfold Path. So this is a second inopportune movement. The third is one is when Buddha has appeared, when there's a teaching of the Dharma, the teaching of true Dharma, which is leading to peace or to attainment peace and Nibbana enlightenment. But once born in the world of hungry ghosts, so there one is afflicted with all kinds of pain and suffering. So this is the third inopportune moment, or the third unfortunate existence. The fourth, Buddha has appeared with endowed with all the attributes of the Sammasambuddha. There's a teaching of Dharma disciplines, but one is born in the realms known as Asanyasatta. Asanyasatta means non-percipient beings. In one of the form realms, some beings do not endow with right understanding or right view. So they dislike the mind is thinking all the time. He was thinking that all these mental activities is very disturbing or is a kind of suffering. So they enter into a kind of jhana called form jhana. So they enter this kind of form jhana, the mind or the consciousness cease to active. That means there's no mental activity at all. But the body is there, remains like stone, just like the Buddha Rupa. So it's known as Asanyasatta, non-percipient beings, or sometimes it's considered unconscious being. Although there's mind, but because that being enter into that type of jhana, the mind, there's no more mental activity. So such being, asanyasatta, non-percipient beings or unconscious beings do not know what's happening in the world, in the surrounding at all. So when the Buddha has appeared in the world, they do not know that the Buddha has appeared in the world. They do not know the Buddha is teaching the Dharma in the world or in the Tawatimsa world and so on. So the Buddha said, this is an inopportune moment, or the fourth one. One has no chance to live a spiritual life. Later on, some commentaries also include those formless beings, those who attain formless jhana, born in the formless realms, they only have the mind, but we have the body. So because they do not have body, they do not have the ear to hear the teaching of Dharma. So this is also unfortunate. Then the fifth, when the Buddha has appeared in this world, and there's a teaching of true Dharma and discipline leading to peace and nirvana and enlightenment. But a person is born far away from the middle countries. So in the central part of India, there's a place known as middle countries. Buddha always appear in the middle countries. And all those most of superior persons also born in the middle countries. But there are people born far away from the middle countries. Even the disciple Buddha, the bhikkhus or lay disciples could not go to that place. It's not accessible to other people. And those who are born far away from middle countries, they do not end up with defined behavior. Their conduct is always rude, unacceptable. So the Buddha say, this is the fifth inopportune moment. Even this condition, the chance to live a spiritual life, to be successful in living a spiritual life. But those people born far away from middle country, they do not have this golden opportunity. Then, the next one, the Buddha has appeared in this world, and there's a teaching of Dharma disciplines. One has opportunity to live a spiritual life and attain enlightenment. But a person reborn in the middle countries, although reborn in the middle countries, but holds wrong view. So one holds wrong view. In other words, one has this wrong view that there's nothing given or nothing offer and so on. Nothing given, nothing offer, nothing sacrificed means all this offering or giving dana or making all kind of donation is only a waste of money, waste of time. There's no benefits doing this wholesome deeds of dana. Then one holds a wrong view that there's no result of good and bad action. So there's no this world, no other world. In the one doesn't believe that there's rebirth as long as one is not enlightened. There's no being spontaneously reborn. There's no mother, father. In the words, one holds the wrong view that one's conduct, either good conduct or evil conduct towards mother, father, will not produce any results. So one who holds wrong view also think that in this world there's no ascetic, no broad means of right conduct. Who have realized this world and other world for themselves by their knowledge and able to teach others. So here, aesthetics of aesthetic and Brahmin of right conduct, right practice, refer to Sammasambuddha as your Arahant. So they don't believe they are noble ones in the they are noble ones in this world. Oh. So because of this, holding this wrong view, even one is born in the middle country, one does not have the opportunity or condition to live a spiritual life. Oh. So this, the Buddha said, this is a sixth inopportune moment. Oh. Then the next one, a person has been born in the middle countries, but that person is unwise, unable to understand the meaning of what's being well stated, badly stated, and so on. Or in other words, in accordance with the teaching of Abhidhamma, one is not born with the three wholesome roots. Do you know what are the three wholesome roots? The roots of non-greed, the root of non-hatred, and the roots of non-delusions. So when one is born lacking of the roots of non-delusion and the systems, then even there's opportunity to meet the Buddha, they can't gain enlightenment. But as you know, one should not give up the practice. If one put forth effort, whatever one has learned and practiced in this life will become a parami for the next life. As you know, parami means accumulated experiences. So one may have the opportunity to attain enlightenment in the next life, assuming that the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha has not disappeared. Then the next one, number eight, the eighth inopportune moment. One is born with the three wholesome roots. One is intelligent. But unfortunately, the Buddha has not appeared in the world. So when there's no Buddha, then there's no teaching of Dharma discipline leading to attainment of Nibbana and enlightenment. So the Buddha said, this is the eighth inopportune moments. In other words, they are all eight inopportune moments. But how about you? So you are very fortunate. This nine, you have this unique opportune moment. Even the Buddha has passed into attained parinibbana, but the Dharma has not yet disappeared, and you are born in this human realms. So you should not miss this golden opportunity. So you miss this golden opportunity, you may feel regrets throughout in your life. So you contemplate that, how fortunate are you? As taught in the Dhammapada, hard to gain is birth as man. It's a very rare chance to gain birth as a man. Man is manusa, or humans. Heart is the life of mortals, and heart to get is the opportunity of hearing the Arya Dharma. Arya Dharma means the teachings of the Buddha, which is very profound, such as the teaching of Four Noble Truths or dependent ordination. And heart is, it is for Buddha to appear. So you should contemplate that you are living at this opportune moment. a fortunate existence. If I miss this opportunity, I do not know when I shall get this opportunity again. So one has to contemplate again, not only once or twice. The next one, just need gratifications when noting rising, falling of abdomen. Once in a while, can hear the crack sound of the ear and head. Note the sound and continue noting rising, falling of abdomen. Just want to know if the sound has any connection regarding to the health of body. So when this this sound, what should be noted is hearing, not sound. What should be noted is hearing. So the teaching of Buddha is also known as the doctrine of the mind. That means his aim to overcome mental illness. Mental illness means the cause of mental illness is various mental defilements. And these defilements give rise to suffering or other emotional mental states, and so worry, anxiety, and so on. That's why the Buddha said this is the only way for the purification of beings. The meaning of purification of beings means to purify the mind of beings. It's because the mind of beings is tainted with all kinds of defilements or all kinds of impurities. So the Buddha taught the Dharma for us to remove all kinds of things or the dirt of the mind. But for the body, there's no doctrine for it. So if you want to know whether this cell connected with your health, you may have to ask the doctors. Then the next one, in Chinese, 每次都进入在一个震动均匀的地方, 有时有变动 vibration, 停留很久不变, 那应该怎样处理? 不过大多数不变, 停住很久, 要怎样走? What kind of 更清楚? 前去看清楚, 不然只在远远外表看, 只是飘过而已, 怎样加强 mindfulness? 如果正念停在一个现象, 停在一个现象, 这个现象也没有变化, 正念只是停在那边。 如果是这样的状况, 这并不是一个理想状况, 正念, 静止不动, 停在一个现象, 所以如果, 这种状况, 修行者, 有时要, 提起精神, 或者说静静心, 标记, 或者说他时时卡在这种状况, 心只是停在一个现象, 这个现象也没有什么变化, 正念也, 停住, 有时, 修行者, 可以刻意的, 刻意的转移正念, 去观察其他的现象, 或是回到基本现象。换句话说，修行者必须努力培育活跃的正念。活跃的正念就是不间断的观察，从一瞬间观察到下一瞬间，是一种瞬间瞬间的觉知或者观察。有时从一个现象消失，又观察那个现象。有时观察一个现象，这个现象稍微减弱，又更加明显现象升起，他就必须去观察更加明显现象。所以修行者必须培育活跃的正念。所以修行者所获得的定，有时称为瞬间定，其实它也是一种活跃的定。因为当正念定相当强，当下一个现象升起，正念即刻觉知到这个现象，这个现象也是非常迅速消失，又有一个现象出现，正念又升起，集中正念觉知这个现象，下一个现象也是非常迅速消失。所以修行者必须培育活跃的正念，观察每个现象如其显现。它并不是心只是停在一个现象不动，然后这个现象又没有变化。其实每个现象的本质是不间断的变化，从升起的那一瞬间它就不断的产生变化，然后才消失。但是如果 你的正念是正念跟定很强，已经达到瞬间定，可能只是觉知到现象的生灭。所以修行者必须培育活跃的正念，敏锐的正念。要加强正念，就必须提升精进心。提升精进心，有时必须利用标记提起精神观察。Then the next question. Mandy mentioned about mindfulness before sleep and after wake up. When talking about habitual karma, could Mandy advise about the practice? Could a simple mindfulness of abdomen when sleeping on bed for a few minutes could help? Yes, even meditators does have only a few minutes. They should mindful of the movement of abdomen if the movement of the abdomen is the most distinct object, or if the touching of any part of the body with the bed is very clear, can mindful touching. If there's a thinking, can be mindful thinking, and so on. So meditators can develop this habitual karma. That means by practicing mindfulness before falling into sleep. But if they put a lot of effort to practice and cause the mind very active, the mind getting more active, alert, and they cannot sleep well, then they may not have to mindful of any object attentively or energetically. So they learn to practice mindfulness with moderate effort, or sometimes just be mindful superficially before falling to sleep. Then when they wake up in the next morning, if the mindfulness is very sharp, they could mindful and note waking up. But sometimes the mindfulness could not perceive the moment of waking up. Maybe they realize that they are opening eyes, be mindful of opening eyes, be mindful of rising, falling. If they do not have much time to practice, be mindful of sitting up, standing up. If their times, let's say 1 hour to practice, then they can practice, they can walk mindfully to the washroom to wash face and so on. Then may practice 20 minutes of walking meditation, followed by 30 to 40 minutes of sitting meditation. So this I call happy cooked karma. So in that way, your mindfulness will carry forward from one moment to next moment. It becomes your habit. So assuming that one is could not attain enlightenment in this life, then this habit of mindfulness will be carried forward to the next life. So it's important to develop a wholesome habitual karma. Then when condition permits, meaning more time and effort on mindfulness at home, wise mantan advice on practice, example mindful walking or sitting. Understand practice is based on one's condition. So one, when we said that meditators have to practice in accordance with the condition of life, so as a householder, you have a responsibility or certain responsibility. You have parents, or you might have to give support to your parents if they need your care. Your children, or you may have to prepare breakfast, send them to school and so on. So this is what called the duties or responsibility of householders. But if they do not have much, if they have fulfilled all these responsibility, then they may find time to practice. We can practice mindfulness at any time, at any place. In the teaching, the Buddha always say, mindfulness is needed all the time. Mindfulness is helpful everywhere. So when you want to practice mindfulness at home, you need not have to slow down. You learn to practice in the mindfulness. You do not have to mindful of every pose and movements attentively. It's quite difficult to mindful of every pose and movement attentively at home. When it's because most of the time you have to you can't slow down. You have to walk at a fast pace, doing something quickly, and so on. So you try to practice general mindfulness. You could not practice general mindfulness, then just let it be. Then when you have time, for example, you have done your responsibility, your duties to your families, then you have times. You can practice walking. You will have, let's say, 30 minutes, 1 hour to practice meditation. You may practice walking about 20 minutes or 30 minutes. So during 20 or 30 minutes walking, meditators may mindful left, right for 10 minutes. then lifting, pushing, dropping for the rest of time. They do not have to mindful note many objects during walking meditation when they practice walking meditation at home, or because the condition of life outside the retreats is different. We have to walk fast, move quickly. So when meditators come to practice walking meditation at home, they mindful left, right, lifting, pushing, dropping. If they try to walk very slow and note the movement in details, for the lifting, pushing, it could be tiring the mind. Sometimes can cause a lot of tension to the mind. Then they, at the end of walking meditation, they walk slowly, mindfully, to the place of sitting, sit down slowly, mindfully, and then begin the sitting meditation by being mindful of the basic object or whatever object that's predominantly arising at that moment. But at other times, if there's a arising of unwholesome mental states or emotional mental states, then meditators should be mindful if possible. When we want to practice mindfulness in accordance with the commentary explains four kinds of clear comprehension. The first clear comprehension of what's beneficial. When you want to practice mindfulness or learn kindness, you know there's a lot of benefits. But one should not do it immediately. The commentary explained that one should consider the time and the place. So this is known as clear comprehension of suitability. So you have to consider whether or not the time is suitable to practice, whether or not the place is suitable for you to practice mindfulness. So when you realize the place and the time are suitable, then you may begin your practice of mindfulness, even for a few minutes. For example, sometimes at home, suddenly the mind is thinking of the past, some unhappy incidents, then anger arising. So if the time is and the place are suitable for you to stop your house jaws, then you may stop and mindful of the anger. If possible, mindful and note it until the mindful of this anger till it has disappeared. But sometimes the time and the place are not suitable, then you just maintain some degree of awareness, realizing there's anger in the mind. So one should consider the time and the place. So when the time and the place are suitable, then you begin your practice. There's clear comprehension of the domains of the meditators. Domains means your mind and body. Living in your own domain, then you begin to mindful of your mind or body process which is arising or happening at that time. So if your mindfulness is sharp at that moment or just attentive precise, then you may realize the fourth clear comprehension naturally. The fourth clear comprehension is known as clear comprehension non-delusions. So when you could mindful and note the mental state anger, then you realize this anger is not a permanent process. As you mindful, that mental state anger has disappeared by itself. So we can practice mindfulness outside the retreats, if the time and the place are suitable. So you will have the habit of mindful of your mind, especially when the mind is defiled by anger, hatred, or craving, unwholesome desires. You can make some progress. And when you have chance to go for the next retreat, you may be able to settle down quite fast. Because meditation is all about the mind, or to purify the mind. Then the next one. The underlying tendency and parami are passed on next life, and arise based on conditionality. Are they like a stream of energy, keep transformed? This dies off, next lights up and follow us. How to change underlying tendency in mindfulness context or practice? So here maybe the underlying tendency refers to one's habit or characters. This underlying tendency means some people born, for example, with very hot temperaments. Some people born with a good temperaments. All these temperaments or characters are not permanent, subject to change. If one make an effort to change. So there's a saying in this teaching, sow a thought, S-O-W, or sow a thought, and you reap a deed. Show a deed, and you reap a habit. Show a habit, and you reap a character. Sow a character, and you reap a destiny. For character is destiny. So this underlying tendency, let's say, if I understand from this question, it's about the character or habit of person. It can be changed with the practice mindfulness and determinations. So a similar one is born with hot temperaments, then he can overcome it by the practice of loving kindness. But the best is practice mindfulness, to be mindful of the one's anger, aversion, and so on. By practicing mindfulness, one is realizing that this mental state of anger, which arising at that moment, is not permanent, something to passing away. Then one also gains wisdom. So this can be changed. Then the next, the pair of mental maturity process. So here indicate cover all. Example, lifting and mindfulness on lifting is also applied to mental process. Just to confirm. So when we the mindfulness, actually mindfulness can only mindful of one object, either mental object or physical object. So when there's lifting movements, then there's arising of mindfulness. Note the lifting movements. When lifting movements have passed away, assuming that when the lifting movement had passed away, actually the mindfulness that was noting the lifting movements also passed away. So when there's a assuming that there's a thinking arising in the next moment, then there's a new process of mindfulness arising, not the thinking. So our mindfulness can only perceive one object at each moment, either mental object or physical object, and that mindfulness is not a permanent process. According to the explanations, even the mindfulness eventually becomes an object being perceived by another process, awareness, and so on. So when you could practice in a longer retreat, sometimes you may have this experience that mindfulness also become an object for the another process of mindfulness, awareness, or sometimes they call it knowing mind. So even they call it knowing mind, that knowing mind is also not a permanent knowing mind. It's also subject to passing away. Then the same question, the next question asked by the same meditators, in worldly matter and cultivation, unlike here is the writing is not so clear, unlike hell and consciousness, there are time lapse and condition. How mindfulness guide us to see the relationship between effect and correct cause and its associated conditionality. So what should we concern is a cause. And sometimes in the explanations about karma, when we talk karma and its results, so they use the word cause and its effect, cause and effect. And a cause is sometimes arising a cause is not due to one condition, more than a condition. So I had explained with the examples of hearing or seeing. Of course, sometimes the text just quote the most significant condition. That means there's a sound. Then hearing consciousness will arising. So sound or the noise is one of the six external sense species. So when there's a sound, then there's arising of consciousness. But for the sound to appear at the ear door, there must be other conditions. For example, there must be a space. So there's a space, that's why the sound can travel to your door. Assuming that this hall is a soundproof hall, when soundproof, could you hear any noise outside the hall? Not possible, unless you drill a hole, then the sound may be traveling through that hole, then you can hear it. So there's another condition. Then you must end up with ear sensitivity. Once deaf, then even the other condition, two conditions are met. If one's deaf, even there's a sound, there's a space, one can't hear the sound because one is deaf. So what should be careful is this condition. So what happens when one does not mindful of the hearing at that moment? If you have a chance to read the teaching of Abhidharma, very soon the mind will perceive, for example, voice, make a distinction of whose voice of a man or lady. Then you do not mindful well, the mind will go on to analyze or to think this voice is unpleasant to hear. So if one realize it's not present, then if one did not mindful of it, then very soon, if that unpleasant voice is persisting, then there's a feeling of anger, aversion, hearing that unpleasant voice. If one could not mindful, eventually one may commit unwholesome karma. Even scolding the mind is also one of the unwholesome mental karma. So that's why we should mindful of the present moment. If one has performed a karma means karmic actions, then the results or the effect will be ripening sooner or later. So it's important to mindful at this present moment. Do illusion appear when I use starting sitting to start off sitting meditation? This time I didn't go fast, but an illusion of green and copper color of patterns floating, moving rhythmically. It's not mental images that appear in pure sitting. I note seeing but doesn't disappear, then I switch attention to abdomen rising and not look at it. In my first retreat in 2012, I used starting sitting too fast and a twister of rate twist faster and faster and stop it. Kubante advised us how to deal with it, seeing, noting it without looking it at characteristics. What if it goes on and on? So when there's this color appears, meditators also should mindful and not seeing. Whenever meditators mindful and not any object, they should not know it too fast or too quick. If they know it very fast, for example, seeing, they may not able to mindful of the object well. Sometimes the mind is staying with that labeling or the quick noting or rapid noting. If noting very slowly, sometimes the mind also slow down. So we always instruct meditators to note any object, neither quick nor slow. So whenever seeing bright lights and so on, meditators mindful note seeing. If the mindfulness is very precise and attentive, that mental phenomenon will also pass away by itself. So we have to realize that when we mindful and know any object, we want to realize them as a nature process. Nature process means we can't exercise the arising of any object. We also can't exercise control over the passing of an object. Whatever object that's arising at that moment, it also has the characteristic of passing away. So when you're mindful of it precisely, the mental object will pass away by itself. If you purposely stop the mental object or cut off the mental object for the thinking, then you are not practicing the way of mindfulness. But there's an exception of practice. Assuming that meditators seeing this phenomenon of bright lights, colorful light, all kinds of color, again and again, every sitting meditation, seeing these bright lights. Sometimes they realize this phenomenon of bright lights or colorful lights lasts for a longer period of time in a session of sitting. So sometimes the teachers will advise meditators to ignore it. They may mindful and note it a few times, then they may turn their attention to their basic object or other object. But when it's happening, when it first happening, meditators should take it as an object and note it continuously. If they note it well, then they may realize this object is not a permanent object. In practice, it has been a habit to see pain characteristics with merely pain, noting and feel pain sensations. It seems difficult to hold attention to be precise. Pain grabs the attention, but maybe not precise. Kubante advised on this. Pain is a sensitive object. So meditators need patience. If there's not enough patience, the mindfulness can't stay with the process of pain, especially when the pain is very persisting. So meditators need patience and also be able to perceive directly any mental reactions. So sometimes when meditators experience pain, they may not have to put more effort to focus the mindfulness on pain, but they only need to develop patience or be mindful of the pain calmly, or in those learn to be mindful of pain or any kinds of physical discomfort with composed mind. Sometimes the intensity of painful sensation is increasing, getting stronger, almost unbearable. Meditators may drop the mental living temporarily. You must be mindful of that strong pain or almost unbearable pain. When they could mindful of it well without labeling, sometimes they could mindful of the pain better, or sometimes the intensity of painful sensation is decreasing. When they can mindful and note it, then they note it again. The next one, on last night talk, one seven stages application, I heard Bhante said among cause effect condition, uproot the condition. Shouldn't we uproot the cause or whichever deem appropriate for effect nor resulting further effort? How would mindfulness guide us in seeing cause and work on cause? Zai ying sang nu li, a guideline. I strive on an overly matters. Zai ying sang nu li, dan jie shou zhen he guo. I understand acceptance and detachment. So last night the talk is related to 12 links of dependent originations. So sometimes when we say karma is results, so sometimes it means causal condition and its results, causal condition. So there are 12 links of condition. Sometimes it's summarized into three kinds, three rounds, or it's not three kinds of vata. Vata means you're going round and round again in this cycle of birth and death. It's because the condition is not yet has not. It's because the condition is not has not yet uprooted. So there are three kinds of vata. The first is known as kilesa vata, consists of three links. There is ignorance, craving, and clinging. Then the second round, or they call karma vata, means a round of actions, consists of sankara, of formations, and bhava, becoming. So because of this karma vata, then you produce round of results called vipaka vata. In brief, round results means that your karma, you produce rebirth again. So when one has understood or realized the cause and effect, then this cause will produce effect or results because there's a condition. The condition means your ignorance, craving, and clinging. So because of craving, clinging, because of ignorance, craving, and clinging, your karma will produce results. Then, so you want, let's say, so when there's result, that means there's rebirth. So, how to stop the rebirth? How to stop the rebirth? So, if we want, we should stop the rebirth. Sometimes we say that you should stop doing karma, isn't it? Then how to stop doing karma? We must remove this ignorance, craving, and clinging in terms of 12 links dependent origination. So because of this condition, that's why the karma will produce results. So that's why we should make an effort to remove this condition. When condition remove, one will not do any karma anymore. Then there is no more birth. So the most important is whenever you're doing karma, you must be aware of condition. So where do you find this condition? Condition means your mental states, craving, ignorance, craving, clinging. So this is condition. So if you doing anything out of craving, then that actions you produce results. And the last one. What is the purpose of meditating? Are we just supposed to think what we are thinking? Actually, if one understand the teaching, the answer teaching is meditation. And the purpose of meditation is to purify the mind from all kinds of defilements, such as the three roots of evil, or lobha, dosa, moha. So that's why we have to meditate. I think I did mention before, purity or impurity of mind depends entirely on oneself. No one can purify your mind. So that's why just I say that the teaching of the Buddha is known as doctrine of mind. The aim is to purify the mind. and to purify the mind, we also have must develop supportive condition. And one of the supportive condition is purification of moral conduct. So that's why one has to observe the precepts all the time. I just answer briefly the question asked in the previous night. So, how do we know if in our past life we could be a Sotapanna or Sakadagami? I did mention the qualities of Sotapanna. According to teachings, one has attained, for example, this stage of enlightenment in previous life. Even one does not know that one had attained it in the previous life, but in this life, he will never violate any five moral precepts. And according to teaching, even if that person is not fortunate, born at a time where there's no more Dharma, or Dharma also subject to disappear, even if happened to born at the time the Buddha did not appear, there's no teaching of Dharma or discipline, that person also will never violate five precepts. So if one attain the second highest stage, definitely the greed, hatred, delusions will become very weak. Then the next question about explanation of 16 stages of insight knowledge. You may refer to the book written by Venerable Marcy Saido on the progress of insight. Venerable Marcy Saido, you can say he's the authority of this progress of insight. Then, which is the longest meditation you have heard of or conducted globally? You talk about former retreats or what we call organized retreats. Some center might organize for 3 months. 3 months, what I call organized retreats. Or in Burma, winter retreats last for 2 months and so on. But actually, one can do personal retreat for the whole life if one has the conditions. So you do not have to think about this what I call organized retreats. You have the condition, you can do it for the whole life till the last moment of the breath. So I wish all of you have the confidence to continue your practice. Be mindful all the time and purify your mind from all kinds of defilements and attain your spiritual goal soon.